Harry the Hufflepuff. Written by Lullaby Nell. Read by Opalsong. Part 14 of As Green as a Fresh Pickled Toad series. Summary. This is for the 5+ headcanons game, where someone called for HP resorted. Harry is a Hufflepuff, and this is nothing but fluff. For the 5+ headcanons game, where someone called for HP resorted. I was going to do the golden trio, but decided on just Harry instead, because Hermione is a pretty hardcore Gryffindor for me. This excellent post explains why. Linked in the text. As is Ron, and inter-house friendships are awesome! 1. Harry goes into Hufflepuff. Look, the hat said Harry could do well in Slytherin, but let's be real, Harry would die in Slytherin. Unless Ron came with him or something, and they spent all their time camping out in Gryffindor. Well, I'm 100% positive Voldemort had plenty of followers from all Hogwarts houses. Book canon is pretty clear that Slytherin is kind of like a racist country club. The hat specifically states that Slytherin is for those whose ancestry is purest. Which isn't Harry, as clever and determined as he is. Yes, Slytherin is for the cunning and ambitious, which are great traits, and my personal headcanons ignore book canon entirely. My personal headcanons have Slytherin with its fair share of Muggleborns and Half-Bloods, including Phil from this post, linked in the text, who has a Muggleborn mother plus Muggle father, and Daphne Greengrass's half-blood girlfriend, Tracy Davis. I love redeemed Slytherin, and Fannin's not-all-evil Slytherin. But for this exercise, we're going to focus on book canon, and not Fannin, or the Pottermore retcon, where prejudice and purists are rampant. Wizard society is messed up and racist as hell. The HP series is pretty dark. And if you stuck 11-year-old half-blood muggle-raised Harry, the boy who lived Potter, in the house of largely racist purebloods who will go on to explicitly or implicitly support Voldemort, the genocide slash imprisonment slash torture of muggleborns, etc., through violent hate or ignorant apathy, then I'm pretty sure he would die. Slytherin is probably the worst possible environment to stick Harry in besides Privet Drive. Never letting this go. WTF, Dumbledore. Snape, an active abuser of Harry throughout the series, definitely wouldn't look after the child that is now in easy access of known purist extremists. So Harry goes into Hufflepuff because Hufflepuff is great. Fight me. While he's no real Ravenclaw and could make a pretty great Gryffindor and would die in Slytherin, Harry knows the value of hard work, like he knows the calluses on his hands. Harry is determined and stubborn and dedicated, and he's one of the most loyal people you will ever meet. You'll hardly find a boy more just and unafraid of toil, and despite his fame, he's humble and kind and treats his inferiors with respect. Growing up in a cupboard like a house elf will do that to a wizard. Oh, he's biting and cold sometimes, but always in turn. And oh, he's angry and unkind sometimes, but only to the parts of humanity, Death Eaters, purists, murderers, torturers of children, that no good man could love. bravery and chivalry is a just and hard work, and Helga would be proud to have a Hufflepuff as hardworking as Harry Potter. "Hufflepuff!" shouts the Hat. "Let's put that loyalty to work, shall we?" 2. Harry remains friends with Ron and Hermione, and the three of them drive the Hufflepuff prefects absolutely nuts. Yeah, they might not be in the same house, but who says a badger and a lion can't be friends? Ron and Harry are both determined to stick to the friend they found on the train, and they're not going to let a little thing like being in different houses stop them. Also, of Ron's roommates, Dean and Seamus are already looking to be best friends, and Neville is more into herbology and staying firmly on the ground than things like chess and Quidditch. And of Harry's roommates, Ernie McMillan is kind of a pureblood, wizard-raised, pompous jerk. Justin Finch-Fletchy is a rich, muggle-born, sort of pompous jerk. Zacharias Smith defies all description of how much of a jerk he is. And Wayne Hopkins is a half-blood who quickly escaped to his childhood friend in Ravenclaw. Jerk. Oh, they're all nice enough people, sure. Even Smith, probably. Though Harry doesn't really see much evidence of that. It's just that no one really gets Harry Potter like Ron Weasley. So Harry and Ron jump back and forth between Gryffindor and Hufflepuff at meals and joke about how they're going to be Quidditch rivals once they get on their house teams. Gryffindor is 200% okay with having the boy who lived as an honorary Gryff, and Hufflepuff is much less okay with the Weasley twins constantly inviting themselves over to look after the poor little lion who's been tossed to the Badgers set. For fuck's sake, Weasleys! We're not going to eat him! How the fuck did you even get in here? Head girl Joyce Summerby says, pulling herself out of the most comfortable sofas ever, TM, where she was helping the Hufflepuff firsties, plus Ron, who was fucking invited, with their potions homework. Because it's not like fucking Snape was going to teach them shit. See me rolling up my sleeves, holding this wand here? Wanna guess what we do to repeat trespassers and Hufflepuff Weasleys? Eh? Wanna tell them, Aiden? Aiden Gumboyle, 7th year prefect, doesn't even look up from where he's studiously ignoring his DADA homework, feet kicked up onto a potted baby strangler blood melon plant trying to squeeze the life out of his shoes. "Tell him to bring food next time, please," he says obligingly. "And the good tea they never serve at breakfast." "Oh, for fuck's sake, Aiden," Joyce says. The worst part about the response being that he's not wrong. And when the Weasley twins show up with a platter of honey buns straight out of the oven, kicking them out quickly moves to the back of the priority list. Joyce spends their future visits glaring at them, serving the food to a bunch of delighted and hungry first years, then angrily eating baked goods until they leave and take their chaotic fun and life-of-the-party likableness with them. Ron and Hermione still bicker, and Hermione still ends up crying in the bathroom on Halloween. Harry is sitting at the Gryffindor table when he realizes that Hermione doesn't know, and runs off with Ron. But the difference is that 5th-year Hufflepuff prefects Bartholomew Blenkinsop and Constance Summerby immediately notice that one of their baby badgers is missing and throw a fit. Constance Summerby is not even 5 feet tall, but that sure as hell doesn't stop her from standing on a bench and yelling in Percy Weasley's face about keeping track of his children. What kind of fucking mother are you, Weasley? Meanwhile, Joyce Summerby glares daggers at the Weasley twins while grumbling, "I bet you fucking encouraged this fucking bullshit, didn't you?" The Golden Trio still trash a bathroom and knock out the troll, but the main difference is that Sprout swoops in to get them all some hot chocolate. Then she and McGonagall team up to absolutely roast Dumbledore for letting this happen. Harry finds himself being checked over for injuries and being simultaneously berated by 6th-year prefects Simon Savage and Rain Shacklebolt. Hermione is being cooed over by Bartholomew Blenkinsop, checked over by 7th-year prefect Hygiena Smythwick, and told to just punch Ron in the face next time he upsets her by Aiden Gumboyle. while the Somerby sisters are checking over Ron and ranting about those dumbass Weasley boys. How the fuck does Cousin Angie even put up with that bullshit? And complimenting a confused but happy Ron on being the most sensible one of the lot, since that unfairly gorgeous and perfect Bill Weasley graduated. He ought to have been a badger, really. Because Hufflepuffs close ranks like nobody else, it is all very, very strange, but pretty cool. Hufflepuffs pride themselves on hard work and fairness and working together. You take one Hufflepuff, and you take the lot, and they'll treat you just the same. Ain't anyone who does interpersonal connections and networking like a Hufflepuff. You need a job? A babysitter? Somebody killed? A wedding planner? Don't worry, friend. Your Hufflepuff buddy knows a guy. Draco Malfoy tries to challenge Harry to a midnight duel, and it doesn't go well. Somebody's first year out of bed senses and charms are tingling before Harry even reaches the barrels. And he spends his midnight duel getting lectured by Hygiena Smythwick on propriety and honor and him not knowing how to do a disarming charm properly. You little fool. Joyce Somerby is busy sending a message for somebody to check on Ron Weasley, who is without a doubt out of bed. The next day in charms, Aiden Gumboyle turns to his desk partner, 7th-year Slytherin prefect Victor Vaisley. "Please tell that little Malfoy shit to leave my Potter brat alone," Aiden says. "And pass me a toucan, please." Victor snorts, wearing the tired rings of someone who had to tell said little shit to shut up about said brat and go to goddamn bed already. "Yeah, because that's definitely gonna work," Victor says, and passes Aiden a toucan. Hermione only has to ask who Nicholas Flamel is to the Hufflepuff common room, having been invited to join their mass study sessions. She's a bit loud and bossy at first, but Joyce is pretty good about making sure everyone is equally heard, and gives more than a few lectures on how to talk to people nicely and without sparking conflict. "Shut up, Aiden, it's not ironic," to get an answer. The first, because Emmanuel Strout is trying for an alchemy-slash-healer double apprenticeship. The second, because Bertie Kettle has the largest collection of chocolate frog cards in all of Britain. Harry, Hermione, and Ron plan to have Charlie Weasley take Normert away, but they don't get far into the conversation before 7th-year Tricia Yoodle overhears them and is like, "Charlie Weasley is coming back to Hogwarts?" Then they're all flooded with a bunch of upper-year girls who want to hear about how Charlie, dragon wrangler, good enough to play for England, Weasley is doing. Very, very asexually, honestly. But Ron doesn't know that, and Tricia Yoodle doesn't want to hear that. They are very disappointed to learn that Charlie's not coming back. But hey, Charlie's dragon wrangling friends are pretty cool too. And by this time, Joyce, Hygienia, and Aiden have all been brought into this mess. Like, what the fuck have you done now, Potter? Because honestly, Hufflepuffs and their rumors may be the fastest information network on the planet. Joyce shuts the information flow down, so there are only rumors and Hagrid won't get into trouble, and then immediately takes over this dragon smuggling mission. Because like hell are the first years going out at midnight. Norbert the Norwegian Ridgeback gets smuggled off to Romania under an extremely powerful sleeping charm in a locked cage at the bottom of Tricia Yoodle's spare purse with an undetectable expansion charm on it. Because no one really looks twice at three teenage girls, Tricia, Joyce, and Hygienia, flirting with a pair of traveling dragon wranglers in the Three Broomsticks. "And that's how it's done, brats," Aiden Gumboyle tells the Golden Trio. Joyce Somerby flips the fuck out when Harry still goes to try and stop Voldemort alone. He heard about the unicorns through Hagrid, and the Golden Trio pieced it together using Dumbledore's vague hints and Harry spying on Quirrell and Snape, besides Ron and Hermione. Harry still stops Voldemort, but learns very clearly that he is not to be doing anything on his own ever again, or I will tie you to a chair for the rest of your life. Do you understand me, Potter? 3. Harry quickly gets recruited into the Hufflepuff Quidditch team, and it's fantastic! Draco still steals Neville's rememberable, Harry still goes up after it, and McGonagall still catches him displaying, frankly, incredible seeker skills. The only difference is that McGonagall actually gives him a single, very light detention, like cleaning desks or something, and she actually spends the entire detention telling Harry about what an incredible Quidditch player and flyer James Potter was, much to the delight of a starry-eyed and slightly confused Harry. And then spends the next month being extremely bitter in Sprout's extremely smug direction. Sprout already has Diggory. She doesn't need or deserve a seeker like Potter the sequel. It's just not fair. That's what it is, Phileas. Potter should have been a Gryffindor, really. Heavens knows why he went into Hufflepuff. That's just ridiculous. Minerva, please. It's been 3 hours. I don't care. But McGonagall's ranting is frankly nothing compared to what happens when Oliver Wood finds out they could have had Harry Potter's seeking skills on his team. Hufflepuff captain Tamsin Appleby does not hesitate to shove this gay Ned to his face at every opportunity. There is outright brawling, at least until Ginny Weasley shows up, and then Oliver just starts giving her hour-long rants about how Harry Potter is the enemy and must be destroyed at all costs. Ginny Weasley, with her massive and embarrassing crush on Harry. I failed step one. Harry gets onto the team as a reserve seeker, actually, because first years aren't allowed to have their own brooms, and he doesn't know the rules or the team plays yet. He's really good, though, so Tamsin is considering putting him into some games this year, and definitely in games next year. They'll train Diggory up as a reserve chaser, because Merlin knows that Malcolm Peace can't go a season without giving himself a concussion or a broken limb. Besides, the more the merrier, after all. Harry loves Quidditch, and loves being part of the team. He's nervous at first, because what if this Diggory guy thinks Harry is stealing his position? Diggory is supposed to train Harry to be a seeker, but what if he hates Harry for being a natural flyer? Harry ends up being the vice-captain to Cedric's captain, seeker while Cedric plays chaser, and with the biggest possible crush on Cedric Diggory. 4. Harry's first crush is on Cedric Diggory. Cedric Diggory is a third year and just, he's so nice. He's the nicest person that Harry has ever met. He's made of smiles and kindness, and he admits that he doesn't want to give up his seeker position, but Harry clearly has the potential to be even better, and it's important to think about what's best for the team. He's not going to give up his position so easily, though, Potter. No, he's not going down without a fight. Also, how about some hot chocolate after this? It's kind of cold out. Cedric compliments Harry sincerely whenever Harry perfects a move or team play, and watches anxiously whenever Harry does an insane dive that belongs on Wizard Jackass. They practice longer than anyone else, and hold little seeker competitions, jokingly jostling for the position. Cedric is the one who helps Harry decide on what broom to get, and recommends Quidditch strategy books, jumps over a bench to ruffle Harry's hair when his broom finally arrives in the mail. And Harry is the one who encourages Cedric in second year, when Tamsin apologetically puts Harry in as their seeker, and puts Cedric as reserve, and in a rotating chaser position. Because Harry learned a lot from Cedric, and even if Cedric's not playing in games, he's still a shoe-in for Quidditch captain and prefect, because everyone looks up to him, and he's a great leader. And Harry's favorite part of Quidditch, besides flying itself, is flying with Cedric. Cedric is smart and popular and has so much more going for him than some dumb boy who lived title and being a natural flyer. Meanwhile, Ron Weasley and Hermione Granger, who show up to a good handful of Harry's Quidditch practices with hot chocolate and chess sets and books, give each other this mutual look of, oh my god, is this actually happening right now? Because Harry hangs on Cedric's every word, and would probably actually hang on to Cedric himself if he could. And Cedric is starting to look at Harry with stars in his eyes, especially when Harry is flying or getting something right or doing basically anything. Does Harry know? Hermione asks finally. No, Ron answers, from where he's got his feet kicked up on a stand bench and is busy reading up on possible monsters for the Chamber of Secrets. Pretty sure that Diggory doesn't know either. Hermione looks to where Harry is excitedly chattering on about what idiotic thing Lockhart did in class today, with Cedric grinning ear to ear and laughing so hard he might fall off his broomstick. Harry has accidentally bumped into Cedric no less than half a dozen times this practice. How the hell does Diggory not know? Cedric Diggory is 15 to Harry's 12, a shoo-in for Quidditch captain and prefect, and probably head boy. And she heard from Wayne Hopkins that the Ravenclaws all know that Cho Chang likes him. She's also pretty sure that no matter how much Cedric beams when he sees Harry in the halls, the fourth year is far too honorable to consider having interest in a second year. At least, that's what Constance Summerby and all the gossipy Hufflepuffs have said, and Ron agreed. "This probably isn't going to end well," Hermione says, with no small amount of concern. "Probably not," Ron agrees. It definitely doesn't end well, and Ron and Hermione share another commiserating look when Harry starts complaining about how Cedric doesn't have as much free time now that he's dating Cho Chang, and Cho Chang is really nice, but Harry would just sort of prefer that Cedric wasn't dating her for some inexplicable reason. Also, Cho Chang is really pretty, and Harry thinks he might like her. She's really pretty and nice and smart, just like Cedric, and also Ravenclaw's seeker, which is pretty cool. "You should talk to Sirius about this," Ron finally says, a brilliant suggestion that Hermione high-fives him for later. "I bet Sirius has tons of advice for this sort of thing. Go tell Sirius all about this. He'll understand." Sirius reads Harry's frankly baffling and extremely long letters for help, then turns to the short note Ron sends, explaining the situation. Sirius then turns to a bleary-eyed Remus at the coffee table. He's been hiding out at Remus's cottage all along, turning the heat on low so that breakfast doesn't burn. "Remus, how do I tell my godson he's probably bisexual?" 5. Everything is just really different. "Of course Potter isn't the heir of Slytherin," Zacharias Smith says scathingly to anyone who will listen. "That's positively idiotic. There's no record of the Potters ever being related to Salazar Slytherin." Also, Smith has been semi-stalking Potter for the last month, and Potter has a solid alibi at all times. He never goes anywhere or does anything, really. Potter is obviously innocent. "Thanks," Harry says awkwardly. That explains the past month, at least, and hopefully now Smith will stop staring at him, and Justin and their other roommates and housemates will stop flinching whenever Harry comes into the room. "No problem, Potter," Smith says magnanimously. "Susan, your aunt works for the DMLE, right?" "Aunt Amelia? Yeah, why?" "What do I do if I think that somebody that everybody thinks is guilty is actually innocent?" "Potter, does this have anything at all to do with Sirius Black?" Maybe. "I'm going to send a letter to Aunt Amelia." Aunt Amelia gets into a flaming row with Bartimus Crouch Sr. at the Ministry of Magic. Fudge tries to cover it up, but Amelia Bones flews her old Hogwarts yearmate, Rita Skeeter, like, "Hey, I hate you, but let's cause a goddamn scandal." Cedric Diggory is ready to murder someone when the Dementors swarm the Quidditch pitch. So is the entire Weasley family, because the Seekers up there were Harry Potter and Ginny Weasley. Both kids have extremely traumatizing memories of Voldemort and fell from their brooms. Oliver Wood and Cedric Diggory immediately call for a rematch, and now Dumbledore and a ministry rep have to explain to a furious Molly Weasley why there were Dementors up there attacking her daughter, a boy who might well as be her son, and who could have attacked two more of her children. And if they think that's bad, wait until Mrs. Diggory shows up. "Hey!" says Nymphadora Tonks, high-fiving Harry when she first meets him. "Badgers for life, am I right?" Then she trips over a shoe or something. Harry still goes down after Ginny Weasley in the Chamber of Secrets, bringing Ron with him. Hermione still got petrified. The main difference is that he left a note telling everyone where he went. Ravenclaws swear they heard Constance Summerbee's horrified scream and shouting for Professor Sprout from their tower. Harry later gets chewed out by Rain Shacklebolt, Kingsley's niece, seventh-year prefect, Simon Savage, seventh-year prefect, Cedric Diggory, Constance Summerbee, sixth-year prefect, and Tamsin Appleby, sixth-year Quidditch captain. Then he gets a high five from Ernie McMillan for taking on Slytherin's monster. Accosted by Smith, who scoffs at the idea the entrance is in the girls' bathroom, and then in massive trouble with Sprout for offering to show his roommates proof of the basilisk and the Chamber of Secrets. Zacharias Smith never doubts that Harry fought a basilisk ever again. Pulling the sword of Gryffindor out of the sorting hat is still ridiculous, though. Like, come on. That makes no sense. Harry's a Hufflepuff. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback for both myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening!